It's time for the Financial Cafe, airing every Saturday morning at 9 a.m. on 88.7 WSIE The Sound. Today's show is underwritten by The Chef Shop, your hometown kitchen accessory store, where a good cup of coffee starts every day right. The views expressed at the Financial Cafe are those of the hosts and do not represent the views of Southern Illinois University Edwardsville, the SIU Board of Trustees, or WSIE Radio. Securities offered through Nickel Investors Corporation at No. 1 Executive Park, Granite City, Illinois, member FINRA and SIPC.
If I had $1 million.
If I had $1 million.
If I had $1 million.
I'd be rich.
And now, welcome to the Financial Cafe and our hosts, Larry Lexo and John Graney.
Well, good morning and welcome to the Financial Cafe. I can't believe the year is half over already. We're into July, and what does that mean? That means that we're celebrating our one-year anniversary for the Financial Cafe. For those of you who are interested in prior shows, you know you can always go out to our website, www.thefinancialcafe.us. All of our shows are out there. They're downloadable. They're in blog format, so go check them out. You want to get a little education on insurance, on investments, on 401ks, on wills, trusts, estate planning, you pretty much name it, anything in the financial arena, we've got a show out there on it. John Graney's on vacation this week, so I was thrilled to have a good friend of mine, Chris Schlosser, join us today. Say hi, Chris.
How you doing, Larry?
I'm doing wonderful. Glad you could join us. Thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule. I know this particular week is one of four you have during the course of the year that is unusually busy because of the taxes that are due. And you want to tell folks what your position is?
Sure. I'm the Madison County Treasurer. I've been the treasurer since December.
And we're glad you are.
Well, thank you.
That's quite all right. Chris and I go back, in a number of years in the financial industry, certainly on at SIU. Because you're a grad of SIU also, aren't you?
Yes,
are you not?
Yes.
In the accounting department?
No, I was actually speech comm with a, I was an accounting major at one time, amongst other things, but I finished with a minor in business.
Okay. Well, I was mass comm, and here we are today. So
that's right.
How does that happen? I don't know. Well, I took a look back over the last year. I wanted to see what's happened, and there's been a lot, probably most notably the election of Donald Trump as president of the United States. And that is a continuing day-to-day saga of information, some good, some bad. And we all have our opinions on that. But as those of you who have listened to the show, I was not disappointed with that outcome. So, but other things we've talked about. Oh, I wanted to mention also, the Chef Shop, of course, has underwritten the show since the beginning, thanks to Scott and Nancy Schneider. For that, it's been great working with them. We reviewed and evaluated every coffee they have in the place. We've started on popcorn. They have 80 varieties of popcorn and fudge. They had celebrated their 20th anniversary here just in May. The end of May was 20th year for the business, originally started by Joe and his lovely bride, Primrose, Vicky from Chef Shop, who started it 20 years ago. They, of course, have moved out of the area. They're both retired now, but sold it over to Nancy and Scott about, I guess they had it 8 years, so it must have been 12 years ago. And they have done a great job at developing it. And they've done such a great job that Chef Shop was named an industry all-star. And you have to admit, that's pretty exciting. As they celebrated their 20th anniversary, they were, and they started as a new vendor at the Land of Goshen Community Market. If you've been up there, if you haven't, get up there Saturday morning. It's a wonderful farmer's market, community market for the area, and you will find them up there. They also introduced a community program doing 20 acts of kindness, and where over a course of a month or two, they had actually gone out into the community. I know they sharpened knives for the law enforcement, firefighters. They took coffee and donuts out to families that were in the park. They visited other companies. You know, they just did. So they had 20 total acts of kindness and just one of the many things that they've done. But this week actually happened yesterday. Kitchenware's Industry Magazine. I know that's on everybody's table. But if it's not, you can look it up. Their magazine is the Gourmet Insider, and they named Chef Shop an all-star for, among other things, being on top of their game and continuing to strive to be better. The managing editor of the magazine, Emily Capilio, has a feature article coming out for publication later this month to talk about the Chef Shop and the growth that they've had over the years. I know Nancy and Scott were thrilled when they were notified of the award, mostly because of their staff, their employees. You know, they spend a lot of time and effort working, training, and helping their employees to not only be better with customers, but to serve the industry and to help out in the community. They really took a chance. They went out, learned several new businesses and many of the finer points of making fudge. They do make all their own fudge. They make all their own popcorn. They mix their own coffees. So if you want to have nothing better to do in the middle of the night, I bet there's somebody there either making popcorn or fudge or coffee or all of the above. But go by and congratulate Scott and Nancy Snyder at the Chef Shop. And again, we thank them for underwriting the show. It's been a great opportunity to share some financial advice, some information over the last year. And hopefully with a little luck and a little support, we'll continue on. 1 year ago, our first show, if you go out, it is on the website. We talked about how do you select a financial advisor? I don't know what Chris's opinion is, but I think everybody needs a financial advisor. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that.
I mean, it's one of those things that people don't like to talk about their finances necessarily, but it's so critical. And it's one of my pet peeves, I think, in the country today that we really fall down greatly on financial literacy. I know I work with students here on campus with the Public Relations Society of America and other organizations of graduates, seniors who are getting out of college, getting their first job, maybe buying a car, getting an apartment, a house, whatever. And they don't know anything about credit scores. They don't know anything about how do you go about applying for a loan. They don't know anything about what I consider the very basics of financial literacy. So that is a pet peeve. I try and lecture and work with them to help educate as we have over the years. And selecting a financial advisor is a good place to start, no matter what you do know or you don't know. They're basically, we talked about a real quick recap of that show. You know, there's two types. There's the broker or brokerage industry where your advisor works to a suitability standard. So the products that he's selling must be suitable for the situation that he's dealing with the client. And that's okay. And that's the way the industry has been for years and years and years. We also, and maybe we were a little ahead of our time, we talked about the other side of the business, the investment advisor representative or RIA side of the business, where they're paid as a fee for service as a percentage of the investments. And they work to a best interest standard. That best interest standard has now become law. June 9th of this year, the Department of Labor Fiduciary Regulation, which we've talked about on many shows, did come into play. It is in effect. It's here. So those who are working in the industry in the individual retirement account, the IRA area, 401k plans, advising participants on investments in 401k plans are now fiduciaries, whether they want to be or not. And as such, they are held to a higher standard. They're held to a best interest standard. So what they advise has to be in the best interest of their client, or they can't do it. So, and that's the way it should be. That's the way we've always treated our clients. We will not recommend anything that is not in their best interest. So it falls right in line with what we're doing. And there's a lot of speculation as to whether the Department of Labor Fiduciary Regulation will continue in its present form, will be amended, will be delayed. We just don't know. But in the meantime, we are acting in the best interest of our client. We are acting as a fiduciary. That's a good question to ask whoever you're working with as a financial advisor. Are they recommending solutions and products that are in your best interest as a fiduciary? Or are they only recommending products that are suitable? As John made the point a year ago, and it's a good point. You know, do you hire someone to come into your house to work on your house and tell them that you want them to do a suitable job? You know, it doesn't have to be in your best interest, but if they're suitable, yeah, it's okay. Or go tell your doctor that whatever he prescribes could be suitable, but it may not be in your best interest. Is that something you really want to do? Well, it doesn't change for a financial advisor. So make sure that they are acting in a fiduciary capacity by law, which they have to on IRAs, 401ks, retirement plans today. Ask them what their charge is. What is their fee? They have an obligation to disclose that fee to their client. Let them know how they're getting paid, what they're getting paid, what the services are that they're providing for that advice, that best interest advice, and how often they're going to meet, what type of information you can expect for them. We talked about, you know, just how do you feel about it? If you enjoy working with them, you enjoy talking with them, they have a good reputation, check some references. They ought to be able to give you some names of folks they've worked with. I've got clients right now that I've had a relationship with for well over 20 years. They seem to be happy. They're still around. We're still investing for them, so it can't hurt to check on that. And you can also go out to brokercheck.org. It's a function of FINRA, the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority, and see, make sure their history is good. They haven't had any complaints or any violations of law. Make sure you're working with a reputable firm. But, you know, and John called it a gut check, and I agree. You know, in my experience over time, your gut's always right. If you feel like there's something wrong and you shouldn't be pursuing that particular avenue, then I wouldn't. I'd move on to somebody else, because there are a lot of advisors out there. There are good ones. There are some that are not quite as good and some that are not quite as experienced. So be sure you know who you're working with. You know, they're the successful way to satisfy your long-term goals. What I talk about often on the air is the Harvard study was done back in the 50s. There's really a five-step plan. If you follow all five steps consistently, you will be successful 90% or more of the time. You have to have a written plan. It has to be in writing. So you start with that. You have to have specific time frames. I want to retire in 10, 15, 20, 25 years, whatever it is. And I expect to draw on my income for 25 or 30 years past that point. You have to have specific objectives or goals. I want $1 million by the time I'm 55 is a specific objective. So you have to have a written plan, specific time frames, specific objectives and goals. And the next step really is a fairly simple one. You have to implement the plan. How many times have I talked to a client or potential client and asked them if they ever did a financial plan? And they said, sure, we did one of those. It was about 5 years ago. And I'll ask, well, how's it going? And they go, well, we never really implemented it. It's still on the shelf in the binder. And that obviously didn't do them a whole lot of good. So once you have a plan and it is achieving the results that you want, you have to implement it. And the last and most important step is you have to monitor it. You know, no one knows the future. No one has all the answers. We do our best to project towards that, but you have to have a written plan, specific time frames, specific objectives. You have to implement it, and you have to adjust on a year-to-year basis. And if you do that 90% of the time or more, you're going to have success. You're going to be successful in reaching your goals and objectives. What types of planning software do they use? Do they use the old style average rate of return? You know, it used to be planners would say, well, we'll assume a reasonable rate of return, whatever that might be. And that could be anywhere from 4% to 8%. But guess what? The market isn't reasonable. It doesn't do the same interest rate year after year after year after year. The rate of return varies significantly. It could be up this year, down next year. You just don't know. So using an average rate of return means you got about 50-50 chance of success, because half of the people are above the average, half are below. So a better process is software that utilizes what's called Monte Carlo simulation. Monte Carlo simulation predicts the probability of success by running a series of thousands of what-if scenarios, looking at different points in time. If this particular plan with this particular allocation and diversification over time were implemented, let's say in 1940, would it have been successful through 1960? And then let's look at 1941 through 61, 42 through 62. You get the idea. You know, taking 10-year segments, 20-year segments, what is the probability? And if we can get you to an 80, 85% probability of success, you're going to be where you want to be down the road. There's always unknowns, but we try and look at those too. Comprehensive planning, and I think it's funny, and Chris might also, you know, it used to be people talked about financial planning, and they've now kind of pushed or coined the phrase, you know, holistic planning. You have holistic medicine, you have holistic this, holistic that, but it's nothing more than a comprehensive plan. And under the fiduciary regulation, a planner has an obligation to delve into all of the sides, the nooks and crannies of your life. You know, you really, a planner is not doing their job if they're only looking at one particular subject or topic, you know, whether it's retirement or buying a car or whatever, buying a house happens to be. So they have to look at, you know, where are you in terms of your life insurance, your disability, your long-term care insurance, has that been considered? Are there specific health concerns that have to be evaluated? You know, where are your assets held? Are they qualified or non-qualified? And particularly, and I didn't think I'd get into it this early, Chris, but particularly with the tax increase that's coming soon, 32% increase in the state of Illinois, you got to know where your assets are and whether they are in a taxable account or a tax-deferred account or a tax-free account, such as a health savings account. We can talk a little bit about that too. So where are all of the assets? What have you done in terms of your will? Powers of attorney, healthcare directives. Do you have an estate plan? Do you know who's handling all these things? So the bottom line to me is find an advisor, find one you can trust, you feel comfortable with, let them do their job, listen to them, and review it on a year-to-year basis. And I think if you do that, you're going to have a lot of success as you move towards that ultimate goal, whether it's retirement or buying a vacation home or taking a trip around the world or whatever it might happen to be. So that's what's happened pretty much in the last year. We do have a new president. We do have a Republican Congress and Senate. And I guess part of the question, I will touch on the national scene a little more, but, you know, if you look at Illinois, I think some of the numbers are just staggering, if you will. I mean, they're really hard to comprehend. The funding, let's talk just about the unfunded pension liabilities in the state of Illinois. Every pension plan uses an actuary or team of actuaries to make a determination of an appropriate funding level to be able to pay the benefits for the pensioners, for the people who are promised a pension down the road. And, you know, we figure a reasonable defined benefit pension plan, which we don't see too many of anymore. I used to do a lot of them. You know, if you were at 75, 80, 85% pension funding with a 15 or 20% unfunded liability, then you were in pretty decent shape. Well, Illinois, you know what the Illinois funding ratio now stands at, Chris? And you might. Most people won't.
I know there are several pensions. I know some are in the high 20s and some in the low 30s. So,
well, if you look at the five state pension systems in Illinois, they got worse. They now have a record-setting $129.8 billion, with a B, dollars underfunded. It's $129.8 billion underfunded, which means that they can't pay their bills. You know, they're not going to be able to provide the benefit that it's been promised down the road. It's mathematically impossible. That currently puts them at a standard underfunded ratio, or a funded ratio, if you want to look at it from that standpoint, of 37.6%. They are second only to the state of Kentucky, which has an underfunding. They're at about 25%, I believe, funding ratio. I don't know how you do that. You know, I've dealt with businesses who have had pension liabilities that put them out of business. I mean, they went bankrupt because they couldn't pay for the unfunded pension liability. So, you know, what does Illinois do? Then they change the assumed rate of return on the different pensions. And by doing so, that requires more money to be put in. So if you think about that for a minute, you know, if, for example, the teacher's retirement system and the state employee retirement system lowered their assumed interest rates to 7% from 7.5% and 7.25% respectively, the judge's retirement system and General Assembly retirement system reduced their assumed rate to 6.75% from 7%, which means that they now have just increased the amount of money that has to go in to those systems by $9.6 billion with this change of an assumption on the funding rate for the future. So I don't know how you get out of that. We just have seen the first state budget to go through in 2 years since 2015. It ended up with overriding the governor's veto. There's been a 32% tax hike contained in the new budget. It's $36 billion budget, which got pushed through. The state has over $15 billion in unpaid bills. And Moody's, of course, today has stated that even with the fact that they overrode the veto and they do have a budget in place now, that the Illinois will probably become the first state with a junk credit rating. In spite of additional $5 billion being raised by the tax hike, and the downgrade would make Illinois the first one. And potentially, if, you know, as Chris well knows, when you're dealing with a junk rating on your bonds, that requires a higher interest rate to get money. So now you owe more money, and because of the downgrade, it's going to cost you more to get money. They are also borrowing money. I believe they authorized $6 billion. I've got it here. They're looking at $6.2 billion annual deficit with the $15 billion in past dues. And they're looking at borrowing a significant amount of money now at a higher interest rate because of the downgrade to junk status of the bond. So I don't know. Chris, what's your take on all of this?
Well, and one thing with the junk status, that doesn't allow a lot of government entities like the Madison County Treasurer's Office. We have a portfolio of $150 million, roughly. And when I go out to purchase bonds, I'm not allowed under the Illinois Public Funds Investment Act to purchase bonds that are below investment grade. So that makes it a much more limited on who's able to purchase those bonds when they go to junk status, in addition to the fact that they have to pay the higher interest rate. But I think that what was really frustrating, and I think this is what Moody's saw and led them to stay with the same decision to probably downgrade the junk status, is the fact that they passed this tax increase and are absolutely zero reforms, and there was no caps on spending. There's absolutely no long-term structural reforms on pensions. Some of the figures I've seen, that there's as much as $260 million in unfunded liabilities sitting out there. There's no workers' comp reform, which, in the state of Illinois, we pay triple what the state of Indiana pays because they've instituted some great reforms. So there's really nothing to attract business to come here to expand the tax base. They're milking the Speaker Madigan said no to all 44 items. And so over the last 2.5 years, the governor has scaled back those items, and he was down to really two items that he was focusing on. That was property tax relief, temporary relief, a freeze for 3 to 4 years, and workers' compensation reform in exchange for agreeing to a temporary tax increase. And what Speaker Madigan then again came back and said, no to all of those things, and you're getting a permanent tax increase, and that's what was passed. So there was really, it was a one-sided negotiation, and the taxpayers in the state of Illinois and families and businesses are left holding the bag now.
Well, and, you know, personal tax rates went from 3.75%. I remember not that many years ago when they put in a temporary tax increase that raised it from above the 3% rate. That temporary increase expired and landed at 3.75. Now that's going to 4.95, and the corporate rate is going from 5.25 to 7%. So when you add all this up, and we deal in our pension administration operation with a lot of small businesses in Illinois, and some of them are very successful. Some of them are just struggling to keep the doors open. And you're adding another 2% or so, almost 2% in corporate tax, in addition to their own personal tax going up by almost 2%. And it still, as you said, doesn't address the $250 billion in funded pension liabilities the state faces. And we're still not sure how that's going to affect Chicago, because there are some other issues dealing with the Chicago schools that are somewhat unique to that.
I would add one other thing too. The other major problem here, and this is another problem. This is what Moody's looked at in their evaluation, the rating agencies, is that there was no plan in this budget to pay that backlog of $15 billion. And I mean, they're just going to try to wing it, and there's really no mechanism. Because another thing recently that you might, I might be stealing some of your thunder here, but the a federal judge recently, I think it was a week or two ago, ordered the state to, it's a federal mandate that the state has to start paying $586 million a month to pay the backlog of Medicaid bills that they owe. So that's just another, it's just a perfect storm of disaster right now financially for the state at every turn.
So where's that going to come from?
That's a good question. You know, that I don't feel like that was adequately addressed in this budget either. And another thing, that budget, when it was rolled out, I believe on Sunday, the members of the House had, Speaker Madigan's staff rolled it out about 90 minutes before they voted on it. It was a 638 page bill. And there's absolutely no one that could read a bill, a 638-page document in 90 minutes.
And I've been waiting to use this, Chris. So you led right into it. I appreciate that. So this is another example of a Pelosi-type bill.
Yes.
Now that we passed it, we need to read it to see what it says.
Exactly. Yeah.
I had to use that.
And I don't think we're going to like – and it's also, you know, you had 15 Republicans went along with Speaker Madigan on Sunday. Some of them received so much backlash, including two of our local state reps, Charlie Meyer and C.D. Davidsmeyer, that they actually backtracked and voted against overriding the veto. And so there are five of them that did that. So they, you know, another phrase you can throw in there, they were for the tax increase before they were against it, I guess.
Well, you know, and this goes back to, and I don't want to underplay, this is a very, very, very serious topic. You know, I'm a lifelong resident of Illinois. I think you are too.
Yes.
You know, we've seen a lot. We've seen it all over the years. And basic precepts just don't seem to apply to the state of Illinois. You know, when you're doing financial planning, as I have for well over 20, 25 years, you can't spend more than you bring in. That's a basic precept. It's just something that is built into every budget. If I get a client and we determine very quickly that they're wanting to spend more than they bring in, my advice to them is either, you know, start looking for another job, that pays more, get a second job or a third one if you're already working two jobs, because you can't spend more than you bring in. You know, what's going to happen is you're going to end up putting it on credit cards, you're going to end up putting it on loans, which can easily lead to bankruptcy down the road. And there's just nothing good about it. So I don't know how the state figures they can, you know, borrow money. And I know it affects teachers. It affects welfare. It affects a lot of very, very critical programs, you know, mental health programs and whatnot. Some of the things that as the House voted to override the veto, and, you know, the state has permission to spend money again. You know, road construction will resume. State social service agencies will get some of their money. And most importantly, the big lottery games will resume. So for those of you who are, you know, unhappy that the lottery was no longer available, that is no longer the case. You know, now you can go play the lottery because of the new budget that's been passed. It's just, you know, looking through the different numbers. We don't really know even some of the things that are in there, and it did not address the three most important aspects of the budget that we're spending more than we're bringing in. And I don't know how long you can do that. I know I talk to businesses, and the conversation is not unusual at all about, you know, they're considering their future in the state of Illinois. You know, Indiana, Ohio, Missouri are all looking significantly better in terms of moving their operations where they can because of taxation, because of lack of representation from the legislature. So I don't know exactly where this is all going to end up, but it doesn't look good at this point for us or really for the state of Illinois. So let's talk about a happier topic. we, you know, it's a 1-year anniversary. A lot of things have happened in the last year. the presidential election, the House and the Senate. There's been a lot of good things. I think one of the most uplifting things recently was certainly the 4th of July celebrations. It was great to see that the country can unite again over something, you know, celebrating our veterans, celebrating the fact that that we are free, the fact that we can make decisions. So obviously the output of that is if you don't like what's going on in Illinois, you can move or you can stay and help change it. And I guess Chris and I both decided to stay and help make changes as we can do that going down the line. But so let's talk specifically, because as I shared with Chris coming in, when I told my wife, Diane, who knows Chris also, that he was coming in, and she's like, well, what does the county treasurer do? So let's talk a little bit about, as county treasurer for Madison County, I just paid my tax bill this week. Thank you very much. Or bills, I should say. So what happens to all this money, Chris?
Well, first of all, I always like to put the disclaimer out there, especially since the tax bills just went out with my name on them, is that the treasurer's office does not set the rates, and that we only collect the money. So we list all of the taxing districts on your bill. And usually when we get complaints, I refer people to the appropriate taxing districts to voice their frustrations. However, we do send out the tax bills we collect money for about 220 taxing districts within the county, and we send the bills out. We are one of only two counties in the state that has a four payment plan. All the other counties have two.
And that used to be the way it was here,
yes,
as I recall.
Yes.
We had two payments.
Yeah, during the last recession, a previous treasurer had the idea. He brought it to the county board. I was a county board member then, to help. You know, we have high property taxes in the state of Illinois. We're the highest in the nation, actually. And it was during the recession. That's along with the high other, you know, taxes and debt and everything else, we have the highest property taxes. So it was just an idea to give some relief to the taxpayers. And obviously, it doubled the cost of doing business for the treasurer's office, because it's twice as much work. There's twice as many payments. But I mean, it's here to stay. I think it's a good thing for the taxpayers to give them four payments. So anyway, we collect those. And, you know, the first due date was yesterday, July 6th. The next one's September 6th. We have October 6th and December 6th. And so as we collect that money, we distribute it about every 2 to 3 weeks, depending on how the money's flowing in. And, you know, we just did a distribution on June 23rd. We wanted to do that a week ahead of the end of the fiscal year to help all the school districts get some additional revenue for the end of the year. And then the next distribution will be in mid-July, a couple weeks here. And that one will probably be about $80 million. That's the biggest one we do of the year, pretty much. But so far we've collected a little, as of yesterday, we had collected a little over $80 million so far this year. We have a lot of money that's still coming in that had to be postmarked yesterday. So there's probably another $20 million we'll tick in over the next 10 days or so. So once all that money's collected, we distribute it to those taxing districts so they can get their money, the schools, the cities, the townships, the library districts. And then we also, we collect the delinquent taxes too. So if you've not paid your taxes at the end of what we call the tax cycle, you're sent a certified letter. And so at the end of January this year, this was my first year doing it, we sent out 9,000 certified letters to people telling them that they owed something, either all or some of their property taxes.
Wow, that's
yes,
a lot.
Yes, absolutely. But that gets people's attention. That's our courtesy letter. We're required to send that by state law. And so they come in and they pay their taxes. And that notifies them that they have till a certain date before it gets published in the newspaper. And that usually gets everyone's attention, because they don't want their neighbors to see their name in the paper. And a lot of them, I would say 4,000 or 5,000 of them are just oversights where they underpaid a certain bill by, you know, a few hundred bucks or something like that. So they get in and they pay it. And then they're also notified that if they're not paid by X date, then they will go to their taxes will go to sale. And then we auction those taxes. So that way the taxing districts still get their money. These tax buyers buy that at the auction, they pay the taxes, and then you're required to pay the tax buyer that you'd pay the county clerk to redeem your taxes at that point. And then also the other major function of the treasurer's office is that we invest the county's and manage the county's investment portfolio. And like I had mentioned earlier, it's about $150 million. In the past, all the treasurers have always had a chief investment officer, or someone they've hired or brought in, or a consultant. Since that is my background as a financial advisor, and I also have some background in commercial real estate, but since that's kind of my wheelhouse, I handle the investment portfolio primarily myself. That's one of my major duties. So, and that's what I'm buying. I'm out buying CDs at local banks. I'm buying municipal bonds, federal agency bonds, things like that. But yep. So that's in a nutshell what we do in the treasurer's office. So, I know it sounds really exciting. Yeah.
And why was it you wanted to do this, Chris?
Well, it's, you know, because of my background, you know, I was a financial advisor for about 9 years, and then I worked for a major real estate developer managing his commercial real estate portfolio for about the last 6 years. It's really what the treasurer's office does, is real estate and taxes and investing. And so, and I've always been passionate about politics. I serve as a county board member, and it was just kind of Chairman Prinsler, the county board chairman, was the treasurer, and he got elected in this last election as county board chairman. And so that created a vacancy for the last 2 years of that term. And so he recommended me, and the county board almost unanimously appointed me. So,
well, good. And as I've told you before, congratulations on that.
Thank you.
I think that was a good move for the county, certainly, and hopefully it's working out well for you. So basically, as Madison County Treasurer, you collect the money assessed as part of the real estate tax bill, through the four payments that are due between now and the end of the year. And then those are allocated, I guess, as a function of a pre-approved budget to the various, as you say, taxing districts. Certainly looking at a tax bill for Edwardsville, the community unit school district number 7 certainly receives a majority.
Yes.
Of the payment, over half of the payment. City of Edwardsville gets some, Lucent Clark College, Madison County, which I guess that's operating budget primarily, the library, road and buildings, township, and then 6 pensions that are funded out of that. So
yes.
Where are we in terms of, if you can answer this question, in terms of the pensions that, the municipality pension, the county pension?
Well, that's interesting. So the Illinois Municipal Retirement Fund is not a state-run pension. It is a statewide thing, but the state of Illinois has not been able to get their clutches into it, their claws into it. And so that pension is actually pretty healthy. The giveaways weren't given to municipal and county employees like they were to state employees by politicians who didn't understand math and basic actuarial accounting.
It's fuzzy math, right?
Yes, yes. Yeah. They figure we'd just pay for it eventually. But I believe the IMRF fund, we just looked at this the other day. I think it's about 85-86% funded, which is actually considered very healthy.
It is very healthy.
Yes. And then the sheriff's law enforcement fund, they're in their own separate fund, and that one's right around 90% funded as well. So they're very healthy. I mean, they have to work, most of the county employees, to get to full retirement, they have to work 35 to 40 years, and they're paying in a significant portion in as they go. And the benefits just aren't, when they retire, it's not the, 75 and 80% that some of the state pensions are shelling out. So,
well, and I, in my role as a financial advisor, I certainly see, I have clients in the IMRF, I have clients with the SURS, TRS, any of the state pensions, both for Illinois and Missouri, as well as federal pensions, folks who are in the military and work at Scott Air Base and whatnot. The ones that work well are 75, 80, 85% funded, and those recipients can certainly count on it. But I was thinking about it the other day. I know I have a lot of friends who are teachers, and obviously they have a vested interest. They figured, they've been promised a benefit, which they were, and many are receiving that benefit at this particular point in time, and they're concerned about the fact that that benefit might get cut. I personally don't think it's going to get cut. I do think that certainly the younger teachers coming in now are not going to get promised that same benefit because it is not sustainable, but it's no different than Social Security. Social Security is in a situation, it is significantly underfunded. It's untenable in terms of correcting the situation until the federal government takes some action regarding that. And as someone who's paid into it, my entire life, I suspect that I'll get most of what was promised from that. But my daughter, who's in her mid-30s, not so much. You know, she's going to be in a situation that, although she's paying into it, she's going to find that that benefit, that ultimate benefit, is probably going to be reduced at some point in the future, as will additional taxes have to go in. You know, the most common, I know we've talked about this before, the most common thoughts that are out there is that they, you know, they may increase certainly the retirement age, push everything up to age 70 or even beyond. The second thing is we may see the amount of FICA increased from what it is currently, you know, 6.2% for the employee and the employer, you know, could go up to 7.5%, I've even heard, percent, which will be an additional tax on the individual as well as the business owner. And then, you know, we're going to be looking at potentially means testing, which, yeah, I have really mixed feelings on that, because for those who have done a good job putting money away for the future, then why should they be penalized because they did a good job putting money away for the future? But it certainly is a consideration. So, you know, Social Security is in the same boat as a lot of the Illinois pensions, a lot of the underfunded pensions that are out there. And I'm afraid we're all going to be impacted by that. Nobody likes to talk about it. Nobody wants to do anything about it. But there is going to be a day of reckoning, just as there will in Illinois. You know, we've effectively kicked the can down the road again. And at some point, you know, we're going to have to pay the bills, or Illinois may be facing, you know, filing bankruptcy. And that's just not a pretty picture for anybody. You know, then the courts come in and as they have, telling Illinois they got to pay for their Medicaid bills, regardless of the cost. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting as we go forward. Any other thoughts, Chris, about any changes in your office or things that you're looking to do?
No, I mean, there were a lot of changes over the last few years with under Mr. Prinsler. He kind of, you know, he really scaled back the office quite a bit as far as personnel. The only other changes I know, and this won't affect, I mean, no one will ever see this. It's just behind the scenes. But we actually, several years ago, I think for the last 20 years, we've outsourced our we call it our lockbox, but it's our P.O. box. When you mail in your tax bills to the P.O. box, the Bank of Edwardsville actually has picked those up and they process those payments. And then also, you can also pay at your local bank. Typically, there's 79 branches around the county where you can pay your taxes. It's just a convenience. And it helps our office too, as far as volume. And the Bank of Edwardsville processes all of those as well. And so overall, they process about 206,000 payments a year for us.
That's a lot.
Yes, yes. And there's 130,000 bills, roughly, we send out. And when you figure four payments, that's 520,000. And so we had to put that service out for bid, because they've always done that at no cost to us, because they were able to keep some of the money in the accounts and keep some of the interest on it and wash out the cost of doing business. But once we went to four payment plans, that doubled their cost of doing business. Federal interest rates have been down extremely low over the last 8 or 9 years. They're starting to trickle back up now, but it's been kind of a loser for them. And so we had to put that out for bid. And so we had four banks bid on it, and we're processing that situation now. So there could be a change there. Obviously we want to keep it local and keep all the business here in Madison mm-hmm. County. But yeah, other than that, there shouldn't be any real changes coming into our office. So,
well, that's good. Let's talk a little bit about, I know when people, what are some of the things they miss in terms of their real estate tax bill? I know there are a number of exemptions and
that's the biggest
deductions.
One. Yes, the exemption is the biggest one. So I would encourage everyone, when you look at your bill, and we have the assessor's office tries to stay on top of this the best we can, but when you have 130,000 parcels, it's, you know, it's not manageable, you know, manually to go through all of these, although we do the best we can. But so you need to make sure that if you own your property, you're not renting it, but you own it and you receive a tax bill and you live there in that property, that you have your owner-occupied exemption or homestead exemption. That is a $6,000 exemption that comes off the top of your assessment. So if your home's assessed at $100,000, which means its fair market value is $300,000, your assessment would go from 100 down to 94 when they calculate your tax rate. And then the other one that a lot of folks miss as well is when you turn 65, if you're 65 and you're an owner of that property and you're on the deed, Even if you're not, if you have a spouse that's younger, as long as one of you is 65 and you're on the deed, you're eligible for the senior citizens exemption. And that's another $5,000 exemption. And I know when I was running for county board, I looked up the records and found a lot of folks in my district when I was knocking on doors to campaign. And I found a lot of people who weren't getting these. And the average person was saving between $350 and $400 a year. I was getting hugs and from older women and high fives because I saved them some money there. So those are things to pay attention to. And then it also, there's a senior freeze exemption where if you're over the age of 65 and your household income, I believe it's either $55,000 or $56,000 a year or less, you're eligible for a freeze, which freezes your assessment. So it's not going to continually go up in your retirement years. There's a few other ones. There's some, I'm probably going to miss a few here, but there's the disabled veteran. That's if, you know, that's based on what level of disability you are, how much of an exemption you would get. And then there's also the, home improvement exemption, things like that. So you're looking at a bill there. I might've missed one there, but
yeah, no, you did a good job. Okay. You pretty much got them, you know, the general homestead, owner occupancy, the deduction for over 65, fraternal veteran organization freeze, disabled person, veteran exemption. So there are some provisions, so, you know, check your tax bill. If you have questions, call Chris's office or call the assessor's office.
Yep. Senior citizen exemptions, you have to apply for those every year, I believe. You have to renew those every year. Mm. So that's a key one, because sometimes people will sign up for it the first time and then 3 or 4 years go by and they don't realize that they haven't been getting it. So that's something to pay attention to as well.
Well, that makes sense. I mean, that's all good reason to stay on top of things. So, you know, more will come. Again, thanks to Nancy and Scott Schneider over at the Chef Shop. Congratulations to receiving their national recognition from the Gourmet Insider of the quality and value of what they've done over the years. You know, congratulations to 20 years in business. A lot of businesses never make it that far. So they will continue. And we also want to acknowledge the fact that the Financial Cafe is celebrating our 1 year anniversary. John will be back next week, so I'm sure he'll have a few thoughts to share along that line with us. And in addition to that, we will be touching on not only taxes, but July for us, we're talking about kids. It's Kids Month. We're going to be talking about ways of putting money away for kids for college, some different college programs that are available, some different methods of achieving those objectives and goals. So if you have a child under 18, there are a lot of programs out there we'll be talking about next week and a week or two down the road. I think we may have the auditor or the treasurer for the city of St. Louis coming on. She had called, and there's a special youth program in St. Louis that she wanted to bring to everybody's attention. So we'll try and get that coordinated down the road. So, but thanks to Nancy, to Scott at the Chef Shop for underwriting the show, for helping us out. Chris, thanks to you. I know it was kind of last minute, but with the holiday week and the 4th and everything else, things just got out of hand. So,
oh, it was my pleasure. This was fun.
Yeah, well, it is good. And we'd love to have you back. Will you come back and talk to us?
Yeah, absolutely. I love getting back on campus, too. I know I work close by, but I don't get out here. And, you know, the new science building next door, I hadn't seen that up close and personal yet. So it's great to be back on campus.
So much is going on here on the campus as far as the renovation of the old science building, certainly the new science building, expansion of the engineering building, expansion of the art complex, expansion of the Vidalabine Center. So a lot of good stuff going on campus. And I also talked to the chancellor this week, Randy Pembroke, and he has agreed to join us on a future show. So I'll be excited to get the chancellor on. He can talk a little bit more about what's going on and really amazing national recognition that the university has gotten from a lot of institutions, a lot of organizations around the country. So, you know, it's a great school, you know, certainly is getting better every day and a great value in spite of everything else in the state of Illinois for getting an education. So the Financial Cafe, you can find us www.thefinancialcafe.us. Also on our website, if you have email, send it to either Jay Graney at nickelfinancial.com or llexo at nickelfinancial.com. You are listening to the Financial Cafe on WSIE FM 88.7, The Sound, on the beautiful campus of Southern Illinois University in Edwardsville. So we hope you've enjoyed the show. It's been fun in terms of putting together some information for you and talking a little bit about all the fun in the news going on with the taxes and whatnot. So till next week, we hope you have a great weekend. Thank you for listening to the Financial Cafe.
You've been listening to the Financial Cafe, airing every Saturday at 9 a.m. on 88.7 WSIE The Sound. Today's show is underwritten by The Chef Shop in Edwardsville, your hometown kitchen accessory store, where a good cup of coffee starts every day right. Listeners are invited to send your questions regarding retirement, investments, or any other financial topic that may pique your interest. Send the questions to John at jgraney at nickelfinancial.com or to Larry at llexo at nickelfinancial.com. John and Larry will discuss those questions each week during their Q&A session. If you prefer, they will respond to you in private. Thanks for listening to the Financial Cafe on 88.7 WSIE The Sound.